whether you say yes to a proposal and pay money for a service or you decide not to, there is a cost and a consequence to that decision. And so I think it's important for us as when we're putting together a proposal, and you know, we call this selling, but I don't really feel like when we do this, it doesn't feel like selling. It feels like listening. It feels like listening to someone tell me what they want to do. Me checking in to see, is this something that we can do? And if we can, here's how we can do it.
Welcome to the Influence and Scale podcast, where content creators, marketers, and entrepreneurs learn how to increase their influence and scale their business using content marketing. My name is Tyler Basu, and alongside my business partner, Chuck Anderson, we'll be sharing proven strategies to help you grow your audience, create great content, and generate more traffic, leads, and sales for your business. Thanks so much for joining us. Now let's dive in. All right. What's up? What's up? Hope you're having a good week. This is Tyler Basu. I'm here with Chuck Anderson. What do we call ourselves? I don't know. The co-founders?
Co-founder. I like the sounds of that. Co-founders.
The co-founders of Influencer Studio. And today we're talking about sales. And the reason why we wanted to jump into this topic is because in our first year as an agency, we had to focus on the things that were the closest to the money, focus on our sales process, focus on making sure we knew who an ideal client was for us, what a good offer to present them with was. And then once we had that sales and proposal process in place, now we're starting to tackle our marketing more aggressively and create more content and start running ads and speaking and all those kinds of things, because the sales process is in place. It's proven and it's in place. So we don't have to worry about having kind of a leaky bucket. So we're diving into that topic in more detail today. We're going to share a bit about our sales process. And this is specifically if you're selling high ticket stuff. I mean, if you're selling lower price stuff, it's an impulse buy where you don't actually have to talk to somebody to sell to them. This might not be helpful for you. But if you're a coach or a consultant or a service provider, and your sales process begins with that discovery call or free consultation or meeting with a potential client, because that client is worth several thousand dollars to you, then this is going to be very helpful for you. Now, Chuck and I actually both come from sales backgrounds before we got into marketing. Chuck, you started in like door-to-door sales, was it? Well, that was one of your first jobs?
I just before that, and it's kind of weird, I was in the inside sales department of an electronics manufacturing company. And so that was kind of like my first taste of sales, where I kind of thought of myself as a salesperson. That company got bought out, and I found myself looking for a job, and I ended up taking a job doing door-to-door sales, selling first aid kits and flashlights and whatever to companies, initially here in Vancouver, but then in Edmonton, Canada, where it was minus 40 most of the time in the wintertime. And not a terribly fun thing to do, but man, did I ever learn a lot about selling.
Yeah, it was the same for me. I mean, I did work in retail in high school, but I don't really consider that sales, because it's just people come in. You know, I worked at Foot Locker. I would just help them pick out a shoe or whatever. There's not a lot of persuasion, except when they made me sell the shoe sprays and the insoles that you put in the shoe. I had to give a presentation to everyone that was trying on a shoe. So that might have been my first sales-ish kind of a role. And then I ended up in door-to-door sales at the age of like 20, and I did it for 18 months. And that was like a crash course in sales, and then real estate after that. So I think we've both been through kind of the high pressure sales training where you have to get a deal on the spot because there's not going to be any follow-up. Like, you're in a neighborhood, you're knocking on doors, you have to find customers because you're going to be in a different neighborhood the next day. And then we've both been in roles where high pressure selling wouldn't work. Like, that would, you know, people take longer to make a decision. You have to follow up. There's several touch points. There's proposal processes and so on. And so you have to have a much more patient and consultative approach to selling, which is what we've adopted now. And I learned that in real estate as well, that if I ever like pressured somebody to buy a home and then they woke up the next morning and changed their mind, like, it would trigger a whole bunch of paperwork that I would have to undo to release that property, basically, so I could sell it to somebody else. That sucked, having to do that. So I learned not to pressure people into buying a home. But anyway, Chuck, we've both spoken to quite a few entrepreneurs over the years that don't really like selling. They've started their own business. They're like coaches, they're consultants, they're service providers. But because they don't come from a sales background, or they might have a perception of sales that they just, they feel kind of icky or inauthentic having to do it. So why don't we just tackle a couple of the myths about sales, or a couple of the reasons why there are these beliefs that sales are bad, or you shouldn't do it, or that it has to feel inauthentic to do it in a certain way. Let's tackle those. And then we'll actually share some practical stuff on how we've developed our sales process for the agency.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's two myths right away that I can think of. And the first one is that sales is a bad thing to do, or that salespeople are evil. And so we got to kind of get over that. And so it's, you know, and I've had so many conversations with, you know, coaches and consultants, especially the, you know, life coaches who maybe even more on the spiritual or so-called enlightened side, or conscious business is a term that's thrown around a lot today, that if I'm going to be a conscious business owner, that I couldn't possibly be engaged in sales because it's inauthentic, and, you know, for all the reasons that you had just said. And I think we have to get over that, because the reality in business is that if you want to have clients, and if you want to be receiving money from those clients, you need to sell. And I would say to any one of those people, I would ask them, first of all, is do you believe in the service that you provide? Mm-hmm. Does it actually help people? And does it transform lives, or is it valuable to them in some way? And the answer to that question almost always is yes. And so then my follow-up question would be, well, if you feel that your service is valuable and you're really helping people, then why wouldn't you do everything that you can do in your power to explain that to them and bring them on as a client? Because if you don't, in a way, you're kind of cheating them out of that opportunity of working with you, especially if there's something you can really do to help them. So that's the first thing. And that you know, I got to say, when I kind of converted from the door-to-door sales, it was never comfortable. Mm-hmm. But for me, mentally, I had to really believe in what I was selling. And that was huge for me. When I believe in what I'm selling and what it does for people, I can do it all day long. Not a problem. And I think the second myth that people, you know, kind of believe and buy into is that they are not good at sales. And I hear it all the time, especially from, you know, solo practitioners.
That you have to be born a good salesperson or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Born with the gift of gab, or, you know, you're kind of a born salesperson. But, you know, everyone sells. Everyone yep. sells, whether they believe it or not. I mean, you know, you're selling yourself every time you get out of bed in the morning. On are you going to do something, or are you going to just lay in bed? Right. So, you know, there's these conversations that we have all the time. And so we are selling. And the thing is that you need to believe that you can. And selling isn't this thing. Like, it's not this, oh, I'm going to say this, this, and this, and then this person's going to give me money, and then that's sales. It's much more than that. It's a relationship. So if you consider yourself someone who has really great relationships with people, well, that's sales. You're selling them on liking you, right? And mm-hmm. then it's really just about finding out what they want, connecting with that. And if that's something you can do for them, great. You connect the dots between, oh, I can help you to do X. And that's really all selling is. And when you drop all the nonsense of, oh, it's evil, or I'm being manipulative, or whatever, like, well, first of all, don't be manipulative, and then yep. you won't have to feel like you're being manipulative. But it starts with the belief in what you do, and you got to believe that you can do it. And sales isn't really any different than you just being awesome at what you do.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm so glad you touched on both those myths. I agree with both of them. And if I could add to the one on you know, people thinking that sales is kind of high pressure or unethical, or that sales is bad, that may come from you having heard, maybe growing up or something. Like, if you didn't grow up around business people or salespeople, then maybe the language that was spoken or was negative, like they're just trying to sell you something or whatever, that type of a language, that can help shape that perspective of salespeople. But the reality is there are great salespeople out there that I would consider sales professionals, and there are bad salespeople out there that I would consider the hustlers, right? And maybe even hustlers isn't the right word, but the, you know what I mean, Chuck, the unethical ones.
There are a few out there.
They're out there.
And those are the ones that kind of shape this myth, I think.
Right,
and,
right.
And like there's a few of them.
There's the personas of them, like the used car salesman types and the door-to-door types that are really high, really pushy, and they have like,
well, careful, we're both
they have all these
types,
they have all originally. These slick, well, and so, and I was taught all the lines and all the like the closing tactics, yeah, and
it was horrible,
and the more I learned them, the more I didn't even really like using them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there are good salespeople, there are bad salespeople, so say like you can't just broadly paint selling as something that's bad. The bottom line is sales is what drives revenue for your business. So if you want to be in business, especially if in the beginning when you don't have anyone selling for you, you have to be the one that drives revenue. So you're the one that's doing the sales calls initially until you have salespeople that can do that for you. The other thing I want to touch on, you mentioned that it's a learnable skill. Like to think that you have to, that you're born a great salesperson, that's a myth. I learned that lesson when the first time that I had to train another salesperson. And I sucked at sales before. That's why I started working door to door, because I spent a year working for a financial planning company and I didn't even get one client. I think my mom bought a life insurance policy from me, I think just to help me out. But no other clients other than
thanks,
that.
Thanks, Mom.
So I realized, hey, I suck at sales and that's not acceptable if I'm going to be in business. So that's why I applied to do the door to door sales job. I went through their training. Within a week, I was out there knocking on doors, closing deals, because they taught me a process. I didn't have to have a certain personality for it, certain charisma for it. I just had to follow the steps and learn how to introduce myself and explain what I was doing and make a presentation, answer objections, and then close the deal. There's a process to it. And that first person I trained was completely who you would think would suck at sales. Like I remember his name was Ananta. He was an engineering student and he was super analytical, no charisma, like almost no personality. Like he didn't meet any of the criteria that you would think a salesperson is supposed to meet, but we taught him the process and he went out there and he killed it. He did so well. Within a month or two after I left that office to work out of another one, I heard that he had broke the record in that office and he had reached the top salesperson. And again, somebody that you wouldn't even think can learn this, how to do it, did it. And that just showed me that it's absolutely a learnable skill and you don't need a certain personality or certain energy or charisma to be a quote unquote good salesperson. So those are some of the myths about sales. And we'll start there because I think that not getting over those beliefs, those negative beliefs about sales is probably what stops people from wanting to do it or learn it in the first place. But once you get over that and you realize that you can learn it, you can be professional about it, you can learn to enjoy it, and you can sell in a way that you would actually like being sold to. You don't, and in a way that feels authentic to you, and you don't have to be pushy or high pressure. So we'll jump into our philosophy around sales, which I think, Chuck, tell me if you've got a better word for it, but I think the way that we sell is more of a consultative approach to selling.
If you're going to use a word to kind of give it that sort of blanket overview, it is very consultative. And what does consultative mean? I mean, that can mean a lot of things, but really it means finding out what a person wants, why they want it, and then if you can provide what they want, great, offer it to them. And if you can't, then don't. And that's the authentic part. And you never have to be manipulative.
Yeah, for sure. So I don't even think of the first call that we have a client, by the way, we don't do the one call close thing that you might be hearing about from other, mm-hmm. other people in the marketplace that are, they're trying to like not hang up the phone until they collect a credit card on that first call. I don't believe in that approach. I've personally never been sold by that approach. Not at the high ticket price point anyway. I don't think anyone has been able to pressure me to making a decision right there on the call, unless I already knew that I wanted it. And like, I was just took the call to get the information I needed or get my questions answered or whatever. So we don't do that. We don't pressure people to make a decision in one call. We generally don't even offer them anything on the first call. So our first call is what I would consider a discovery call, where we're figuring out if we can actually help them based on a certain set of criteria that we have that makes somebody qualified to work with us. So in fact, I had a call this morning, so I'll pull up my notes from it. I'm not going to share anything personal on this person, but for these strategy sessions that we do, these first calls, we basically have a checklist of a criteria that we're looking for. I'll just read you through some of them now. Like, we want to make sure, because we work with businesses and we help them with their marketing, we have some criteria we need to see before we'll work with them. One of them is that they have a clear target market. Another one is that they have a proven offer. Another one is that there is a sales process, so that if we're driving, you know, awareness and leads for their business, they have the systems in place to convert those leads into customers. Another one is, do they have an audience? If they don't have an audience to promote their stuff to, then we need to put together that plan to help them accelerate the growth of their audience. So anyway, I literally have these checkboxes, which help us figure out what the starting point for that client is. Like, what's their point A? And then, Chuck, you coined a terminology for this, ABC, not the Glengarry Glen Ross, always be closing ABC.
Always be closing.
But your version of the ABC, why don't you walk us through that, and then we'll show them how we take this approach into our calls.
Yeah. And so, like you said, ABC does not stand for always be closing. In fact, never need to be closing if you do this method, because it is so obvious to the client whether the proposal is right for them when you do this. So we call it the ABC method. A stands for point A, meaning what is their current situation? What's going on for them right now? What is the problem that they are trying to solve, or what are the conditions they're stuck in, or, you know, really understand their current situation and where they're at. Point B, okay, so if you think of this as point B on a map or a destination, is where you're trying to get to. It's the end result that you're trying to generate. And maybe this is a new goal, or maybe this is something that's been eluding them for a while and they're reaching out to get your help. And so you establish where they are now and where they want to be. And then C is the gap in between. We think of C as being the cost. So what is it costing them, either in their business or could be in their personal life or in their situation? What is it costing them every day, in every week, and every month, or every year that goes by, where they have not achieved point B? And so, in other words, why is it important to them, right? One of my favorite questions is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how serious are you about getting to point B or to achieving this goal? And so anything, you know, on the low end of the scale, and, you know, they're not serious, they're not ready. But if it's like an 8 or a 9 or a 10, I mean, they're super serious. And then that conversation about, you know, what is it costing you every week, every day, every month, every year that goes by that you're not at point B? And so it's that awareness of, where am I now? Where do I want to go? And what is it costing me to not have this? Once they're armed with that, now they have that perspective to know if your proposal is in line with what they can afford or what it's costing them in their situation.
Yeah.